You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up at 7 o'clock, it's the storytelling show Snap Judgment. Tonight, what if you discover your plans aren't working? Do you listen to good advice or do you blame the messenger? That's tonight at 7 on Snap Judgment. First, in the movies and cultural memory, summertime for kids is about swimming pools and idyllic summer camps on the lake. But our next guest says for a growing number of Americans, it's become a financial burden and a logistical nightmare. Finding childcare for 11 weeks is one challenge that can hit working families hard. And also paying for summer activities can take a big chunk out of what may already be a tight budget. KJ Dell'Antonia joins us now. She's a columnist and contributing editor for the New York Times Well Family, and she wrote a recent piece about the issue. It's linked right now on the Central Time Facebook page. KJ, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, does the idea of the classic American summer for kids still work these days, especially if you have two parents working?
It's tough. I suspect it may have always been tough in some ways, but at this point we have only about a little less than a quarter of American families have a parent at home full time. For everyone else, summer is going to involve some logistical challenges. The kids may be off, but we are not.
Can you give us a sense of how many parents struggle to handle the logistical and financial costs of summer these days?
I would say that this is one of those interesting problems that affects most Americans. If you don't have, if you don't have a stay-at-home parent or a live-in nanny, which is a pretty small subset of America, then once summer's coming. If you're going to be at your job, 9 to 5, 8 to 3, whatever it is, you're going to need to find somewhere else for your kids to be.
Right, and how do people piece it together? So that's 11 weeks you need coverage, and
right.
You may have a job full-time, you may be a single parent. So what do most parents end up doing with that time?
Well, it varies. Certainly the camp/day camp option is possible. I think I actually don't have the numbers on this, but day camp is pretty clearly a more common option than the sleepaway version. And the thing about day camps is that they run a day camp or any kind of summer learning program, maybe with your library, maybe with your town community, they're typically run on average about $288 a week. If you're lucky, you might be able to find a community-run program or a subsidized program where you can get the smallest things I've heard, other than some really lucky people who are able to find some free thing through programs designed to help really low-income families. But generally, the lowest thing that most people are going to find is $100 a week, which on the one hand, wow, that's not very much to send your kid somewhere, hopefully all day. That's fantastic. That's amazing. And then you sort of go, oh, my God, what are those workers getting paid? But, on the other hand, $100 a week, that's a lot. If you're making $500 a week, that's 20% of your income. And $500 a week isn't even below the poverty level.
Right. And you talk to some parents who are in exactly that financial picture.
Right. And so the alternative is kids staying home, including kids that a lot of us would consider to be too young to stay home or that in at least modern times we consider to be young, too young to stay home. And sort of an unintentional side effect of the worry about kids staying home is that those kids are often, they're stuck staying inside because their parents don't want to find themselves at the center of the kind of child care controversy that caught up that poor woman in, I forget if it was North or South Carolina 2 summers ago, when she left her daughter in a park, her 9-year-old daughter in a park, close to her workplace while she went to work.
Right, and one of the figures actually about that in your piece that kind of blew me away, you write that 11%, this is over the summer, of 6 to 12-year-olds spend an average of 10 hours a week on their own.
Right.
Over the summer, I mean, a 6-year-old, is it even legal for a 6-year-old to be alone?
Not every state has specific laws like that about that, but when they do, no.
I can't think of my six-year-old, you know, alone. But I, one thing that a lot of these parents do, including, you know, me in this scenario, you lean on your family, your friends, and they pick up some of the slack. Is that something else that a lot of working families do?
Right. So I talked to people who were maybe going to work with their, you know, a sister or a neighbor or a friend to combine forces to get, you know, one single babysitter who could watch a few kids that weren't all in the same family. You know, certainly people lean heavily on older siblings. If they've got them, So there's, you know, there are a lot of people. Everybody has to put this together in a different way, which is actually, if you think about, one of the funny things about it. You know, every June, it's as though no working parent has ever had to face that their child was going to be out of school before.
We're talking to KJ Dell'Antonia right now, columnist and contributing editor for the New York Times Well Family. And one thing we haven't talked about yet is summer learning loss. What do we know about what happens when kids aren't keeping fresh what they've learned over the year when it comes to the summertime?
Yeah, so most kids have some learning loss, especially in math. That's pretty universal. Kids lose about 2 months over the summer. Teachers are prepared for that. They go back into the classroom knowing that they're going to go back and pick up that stuff that got lost. But one of the differences between lower income and higher income kids, and again, these are broad figures, sort of across a spectrum of people. Lower income kids tend to lose reading ability as well. So if they're tested at the beginning of the summer and then they're tested at the beginning of the school year, they've lost maybe 2 to 3 months of reading skill. And the difference between that and the math skills is that they don't get it back. So it can accumulate. You can find some research has suggested that by fifth grade, kids can be as much as 2 years behind where they ought to be. And there are even some researchers that attribute about a third of the sort of overall achievement gap between low-income kids and high-income kids to what happens over the summer.
Why don't kids get the reading back as opposed to the math?
I'm not sure that anybody has a great answer to that question. I think it has to do with the way that our brains process and develop our language. It needs to keep building and changing. And so if you're not getting exposed to a lot of new and fresh words for, you know, like a significant period of time, you kind of don't regain that. It's a little bit, I believe, like if you don't, you know, if a child doesn't learn a language when they're an infant, it becomes really hard for them to learn it later, and that could be a second language, or it could be even, you know, kids who, because of hearing issues or other issues, don't get the language experience that other kids do. They it's really hard for them to catch up. There's something about brain development with respect to words that seems to be different.
And what did you hear from parents themselves? You talked to a group of parents around the country.
Yeah.
What did they tell you about how their families functioned?
Well, you know, they were. It's funny because they were the people that I talked to. They were frustrated. You know, one woman she'd actually had to go into the bathroom at her doctor's office to go online at exactly 10 o'clock in the morning so that she could sign her daughter up for the town summer camp. So she was like, I felt like I was waiting online for concert tickets.
It can be competitive.
Going, yes. But so she managed to get a program for her daughter. Some other people did not. Even people that did, you know, wound up paying like 20%+ of their weekly income in childcare, which is a pretty significant bummer. And also, it's way more than what our country thinks that affordable childcare should be. We say it should be less than 10% of your income.
So, would you say that it's fair to say that summer can create, because of these different factors, we're talking about a group of have and have nots when it comes to kids. Either you're one of these kids who has enrichment activities and camps, or you're a kid who might not have those same opportunities.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And the parents of the kids that don't have the opportunities, you know, they want their kids to have the opportunity. You know, one woman I spoke to, she said, you know, I really wish I could afford one of those camps in the movies. And yeah, I could see her point. They look pretty fantastic. I never went to one either. And she was, you know, she had a daughter that was going to end up at a family member's house, an older family member, and probably most days not doing much. And I should add that these are parents that don't have vacation time. So, yeah, they're going to maybe get the long weekend for the 4th of July, and Memorial Day is already gone, and Labor Day will come. But other than that, it's going to be hard for them to do anything to turn a summer special. Because you can make a special summer without a whole lot of money, but it's hard to do it if you're not actually even able to be there either.
We're talking right now with KJ Delantonia. She is a columnist and contributing editor for the New York Times Well Family. And we're looking at the high cost of summer for lots of American families, along with the struggle to find childcare. And we'd love to hear from you on this. How does your family handle summer scheduling? Is it sometimes a stretch to pay for those extra classes or those day camps? And do you think it still makes sense in the era of one, two working parents, single parents, to have an 11-week break in between spring and fall? Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll pick up our conversation in just a bit here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert, and we're continuing our conversation now with KJ Delantonia. She's a columnist and contributing editor for the New York Times Well Family. And we're looking at what summer costs for family, both in terms of the money you might pay for camps and things like that, but also just the juggling, the logistics to find childcare. And we want to hear from you on this. Do you look forward to summer like this for your kids, or do you dread it because it's pretty hard to put together and it can be expensive? How do you handle it? And what do you think about having this giant 11-week break in the middle of the summer? Do you think we should break it up and make them shorter? Call us at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. And we'll go to our first caller now. We've got Paul on the line in Oconomowoc. Paul, hi.
Hi, I just wanted to give my experience of growing up that there were four of us kids in the family, and when my sister was done with kindergarten going into first grade, both of my parents worked, and they left us all four at home all summer long until we all done with school. And I think because of doing that, we learned to get along, and to this day, all four of us are real good friends with each other.
Oh, so you saw some benefits to that. Do you think that your older siblings felt the same way having to care for the littler ones?
I was the old one.
You were the old one, and you liked
My
it.
My sister was the youngest, and I was the oldest. And it helped me to learn how to, you know, cook dinner and prepare stuff, and when something was wrong, how to take care of it, who to call, and, you know, things like that, how to try and get everybody to get along and work together, you know.
Great, Paul. Thank you so much for telling your story there. And Paul, he liked having to care for his younger siblings. He sounds like he got a lot out of it and he grew. Do you think there are some silver linings there?
Well, you know, I mean, I spent summers sometimes solo and afternoons after school solo. And I think that can work in some families, but we have to look at a couple of things. First of all, we didn't ask Paul, but I'll bet you he and his kid friends and his siblings could go out in the neighborhood. Kids can't necessarily do that right now. If you send a 12-year-old out with a 6-year-old, you really are running the risk of having your neighbors start calling child welfare services. They can't necessarily go down the road to the park. And we're also at a time when the other kids that would normally have maybe been around the neighborhood, they're probably all at camp. We do things differently now, so those summer experiences that we remember, where sort of everyone was running around the neighborhood, and it didn't much matter that some of the parents were not home because everybody knew where everybody was. I think that's rare now, and it's certainly rare for low-income families, particularly if they live in a large city.
Well, thanks a lot for that call, Paul. Appreciate that. And we're going to go next to Eliza. Eliza joins us from Milwaukee. Eliza, hi.
Hi. I used to have that problem about 3 years ago. You know, we used to worry about how we were going to pay for my son's camp over the summertime. But when I started my new job, they offered dependent care or flex pay, where they were taking funds out of my check, you know, throughout the month. And then by the time it was summertime, I either was able to substitute or, you know, put that money towards whatever camp that we were sending them to, and that has really worked for us.
That's great. So that's something that your employer offers, it sounds like, Eliza.
That's great. That's really helpful.
Correct. Yeah.
So there is that planning element. So Eliza is able to do it with the help of her employer. Do you think that most families are able to look ahead and say, okay, we've got this almost 3-month stretch coming up, we have to set money aside?
Well, It's tough. You know, if you, there are a fair number of people that don't have $10 to $20 out of their paycheck to put aside. If you're, you know, supporting, even if it's just you and your child on a $550 a week, and your rent is, you know, $900 a month, and you're not getting any benefits there. I think that it's hard, and I also think that if you have to do it yourself, that there's all, some things are always going to have to come up. I love that the employer is doing it, because really, if you could put even $5 away every week, you'd do well. You'd at least be better off by the end. But I think that's really hard for people to do on their own, especially if the car has broken down and, you know, it's the only functional car and it's the only way to get to work and there's that car bill. You know, there's just a lot. It can be really hard.
Eliza, thank you so much for that call. As we talk about the summer and how families grapple with the challenges that summer can bring, both paying for all those camps, maybe enrichment things, and figuring out who's going to take care of your kid while you might be at work. And we want to know what you think at 800-642-1234. KJ Delantonia stays with us, and we're going to go next to Chris joining us in Madison. Chris, hello.
Hi, I just wanted to say that I did my senior thesis on summer learning loss, and, you know, programs that do year-round education have a significantly less summer learning loss, and the difference is most pronounced in the minority communities. We should move to that model. It still gives the kids and families the same amount of time off, but it's spread throughout the year. The other thing I want to add is that camps, there's always a way to get kids to camps, especially with Catholic camps and ELCA Lutheran camps. Nobody is turned away for need, and the VFW, the American Legion, and Golden Corral sponsor camps for vets kids and disabled vets kids. So if you look, there are enough resources.
Chris, thank you for that. Appreciate it. And KJ, what do you think about what he said about the availability being there for camps if you look for it?
Well, you know, I think if you're a go-getter and you're out there and you're really trying to find something for your kids, there is stuff out there. They do fill up quickly if they're inexpensive. And as I talked to, she's actually not in the article, but I talked to one mom whose husband is he's a vet. He's actually just out of the Army, and last summer the kids were in one of the camps for vets, a day camp kind of thing. And she said, well, this year, it's just too far away. We can't get them there. And it wasn't an overnight kind of thing. So I think there's stuff out there, but we have to take into account single parents, transportation needs. There are programs. I don't want to be like Debbie Downer about summer. I actually love summer, and everybody I talked to did too. But It's just that need for more, and maybe it's just more publicizing of the programs that are out there.
And speaking of people loving summer, it was interesting in your piece, KJ, that you talked to some of these parents who were really struggling with how to make it through the summer, but you would ask them, well, do you want us to kind of get rid of this notion of 11 weeks of summer? And they said, no, they didn't want to do that. People love summer.
They don't really, that year-round learning thing, the response that I got was, yeah, I mean, it does solve the summer learning loss. It really does. It's successful for that. But from a working parent point of view, it's the same amount of time that you have to deal with, probably with less available summer resources. And one big difference in that, if not everybody's kids are on the same school schedule, employers are sort of just not as aware that. So it would really, what one parent said, you know, it's the same problem. It would just be spread out through the whole year.
All right, let's go back to our callers now. Drew is going to join us next in Madison. Drew, hi.
Hi. When I was a kid and growing up in Indianapolis, I actually went to one of the first public schools that was year-round, and I went there for 3 years before going to high school. And I don't know if this is just anecdotal or not, but I did notice that when I was in high school, a lot of the honors-level courses that I was in were populated by a lot of the classmates that I had at this public school, whereas a lot of the other schools in the area were the traditional, you know, 3 months of summer, whereas we had 3 or 4 weeks off about 3 times spread throughout the year. And I do think it was helpful, but given that it was the only year-round school, it also kind of stunted us socially because, you know, some of the times we were off on break, all of our buddies that we grew up with in the neighborhood were still in school. So it would have been great if everybody was like that, I think. But, you know, being the early adapters, I think it kind of hurt us as far from a social point of view. And our parents really didn't have a much easier time finding stuff for us to do, even though they only had to do it for 3 or 4 weeks at a stretch.
Interesting. Thanks for that, Drew. Some interesting aspects there to Drew's story. He saw a lot of his year-round school classmates in the upper classes, but it was still not easier for his parents.
Yeah, I think that it's not. I think it would feel like there was never a period of the year when things had sort of shifted into it. I mean, just from the perspective, and for me, the financial part of it is not, you know, it's not the kind of issue that it is for the parents that I talk to, but even just the logistical part of it, sometimes don't you just feel like, well, I don't know if you have kids, but just feel like, oh my God, is the school ever going to have a whole week? and that's, you know, with a regular school year, it's stressful when the kids are really little and there's just there are those few years when your kids are 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 and you're not going to leave them home alone. You know, you're not going to send them to the park. We can't sort of imagine up a 70s summer for these kids. It's not practical.
KJ, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. It was fun.
That was KJ Dell'Antonia, columnist, contributing editor for the New York Times Well Family, and she joined us to talk about the high price of summer for some American families. You can read her article on the Central Time Facebook page. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.